I'd like to call to order the regular meeting of the Water and Wastewater Committee of the Town of Discovery Bay. Can I get roll call, please?
Roll call has been taken, and let the record reflect that all members are present.
Fantastic. This is the time for public comment. If there's anybody on the line that would like to make any comments with regards to water and wastewater that is not an agendized item, this would be your time to speak up and present any of your comments. Do we have anybody on the line?
No, we do not have anybody on the line.
It's not supposed to be there.
That's correct.
Okay, so I'm going to give it another. So if there is anybody that we missed, speak up. Okay, great. I'm going to close public comment. And we don't have any minutes. I got that from our phone. And so presentations, I would like to,
yes.
You're going to do the presentation again?
Yes, we're doing it both, water and wastewater and the finance
committee. Oh, I thought you were doing it for the board.
No, not until we do the committees.
So. Oh, well, this is for you, Ashley. Hello again, Catherine.
Hello. Actually, Mr. Graves, I have... I chatted with Allison very quickly after the last meeting, and actually have a better answer for you regarding the whole EDU.
Okay.
So we were incorrect in the previous meeting where we said that I'm not quite sure where the 0.35 EDUs for a single family home came from. I checked with Allison, and he said the town has always assumed one EDU for one single family home. So if you're home was 5,000 square feet or 1,000 square feet, you were charged one EDU.
That's what I thought.
That's how we always charge them.
That's what I thought. Isn't that how I initially made my comments? But hold on a second. Okay. That's what I thought, and that's why I was confused. So that makes sense, because that did seem awfully high, because I think our previous capacity studies were around 12,000, and all of a sudden we're going to 42,000. That didn't make sense to me. So appreciate that.
Yeah.
It's irrelevant for the future conversation because now you'll get the right information. I was confused. Okay. So please move forward. So you're going to give this presentation again. We have different members of this committee. So go ahead and I'll keep my mouth shut this time and let Ashley ask questions.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Catherine Tanay. I'm a principal with La Jolla Tennessee Municipal Consultant. We are here to update the Water and Sewer Capacity Study. The prior study was done in 2014. And since then, we can move to slide two. Let me just give you a background. What are capacity fees? They're also called connection fees or development impact fees. The city has multiple fees, traffic. School fees, but they were focusing on the water and sewer capacity fees. They are one-time fees paid by new development when building permits are issued. They're intended to cover the costs of new capital projects that are needed to accommodate growth. And these fees do not fund maintenance or annual operating costs. Those expenses are paid from water and sewer rates. Why are we doing this update? The last study was done in 2014. Since then, town has updated its 20-year CIP for both water and wastewater. We've also completed a wastewater master plan in 2019, and the town has received a bid for the beneficiation project. It's being required by the Regional Water Quality Control Board, which is requiring that the town add beneficiation facilities to reduce nitrates in your wastewater system by 2024. Additionally, since 2014, sewer and water demand has increased in the town and throughout California due to the previous drought. A lot of those practices, such as conservation practices, such as giving rid of lawns, new meters have stayed in place and have kept water demand low. Developer agreements, which were included in the previous study, those are completed and done for, and those were agreements that the town made with the developers who constructed certain facilities in exchange for capacity in the water and sewer system. So next slide, slide three. These are industry standard capacity fee methodologies. This is how we calculate the value of your steam facilities and future capital projects. The first method is the buy-in method. We use this to calculate the value of existing facilities that still have capacity for future basically, the premise is that the infrastructure has value that the new customers should also pay for to make them on par with existing ratepayers. So the value of the facilities is based on the sewer and water fixed assets list. And I have a slide that details how we actually calculated this later on in the presentation. The second methodology is the average cost method, and we use it to calculate the fee for planned capital projects that benefit both new and current users. We calculated values based on the value of these facilities, and we divided that by existing and new demand. The majority of the town's capital projects are allocated using this method. And what the town engineers actually went through to each capital project and decided what portion of the project is for existing, which is new cut. Third method is expansion method, and this is for planned facilities that only benefit new development. And the city actually has one project that is calculated using this method, and that's the clarifier project on the sewer CIP, and that is a project that is triggered, that's only needed because of growth, and it's needed to provide treatment for these new connections. Therefore, the cost of the project is solely allocated to new customers. So our next slide, slide four, shows reduced water demand and sewer flow from 2014 and compared to 2021. In 2014, water demand in gallons per day for a single family home was 533 gallons per day. And 7 years later, that demand has gone down to 403 gallons per day.
Why?
For wastewater. Why?
Yeah.
Oh, because of conservation measures that we've implemented during the last drought, we're using less water.
That's what I thought. I'm sorry. Yeah. I probably missed that. I just wanted to make sure I understood.
Thank you.
That's
okay. And appliances are more efficient. The drought message that has been going on for the past few years, the measures have kind of stayed in place. So therefore, demand overall in California, not just in the town, has gone down.
Thank you.
Yeah, same with wastewater. We don't measure, we don't have a meter to measure wastewater, so wastewater flow is based on a percentage of the water use, and that also has gone down about 100 gallons per day from 335 gallons per day to 235 gallons per day. So we use these demand numbers to estimate the number of new customers in slide five. So an EDU is an equivalent dwelling unit, and that is the amount of water or sewer flow used by a typical single-family residential customer. So we're estimating our planning horizon is your planning horizon, and we're estimating that town build-out is in 2041. So based on our reduced water and demand and sewer flow numbers, we're estimating that total build-out for water will be about 8,668 EDU. So, but as I mentioned, EDU is a typical single-family residential customer, but a commercial customer could be equivalent to two or three, or even more EDUs based on the use. So like a restaurant could be like 6 or 10 EDUs.
Are those configured in here, or is it only single dwelling?
Well,
or are you taking like we think a commercial could be 3 EDUs, so we're going to add 3 EDUs for the one commercial business that we're doing into those numbers?
We're saying that currently we have about 7,390 EDUs. That's our current number as total customers, so EDUs meaning residential and commercial EDUs.
Okay.
So we're projecting for water, that's
Like the numbers are combined, correct?
Yeah, and for future build-out, there are some commercial lots that are designated already that they looked at, and those will have the multiple EDU designation to them.
Okay.
We have like 13 acres of commercial lot from what I see.
But that's not included in this 1278, or is that included in the 1278?
If it's included in the master plan, then the number of EDUs includes both commercial and residential.
Okay,
yes, it's included in that 1278, yeah.
So this 1200 isn't all single family residential. It's going to be a mix.
Okay, thank you.
Both commercial.
Primarily, of course it is.
So for wastewater, total build out is 6,809. So we're saying that currently existing customers account for about 81% of the total system already with 5,497 EDUs. So for new customers, system can accommodate about 1,312 new EDUs, that's residential and commercial. So in all, the system is about 85% built out already. So that system can accommodate for water, about 15% new customers, and sewer at 9.3%. Okay, slide 6. So the capacity fees are based on water, two components. First component is the buy-in capacity fee, and this is the this is when new customers buy in the town's existing water and sewer assets. Just correct this asset list. We escalated today's costs and depreciation, and we came out with a total valuation of about $7.8 million for water. And we divide that by the total number of EDUs that filled out for water. We divide that by 8,668, and we're getting a cost per EDU of $904. And that's for water. So that's one component of the water capacity fee. For wastewater, the total valuation is much higher. You have the wastewater treatment plant. A total valuation is about $4 million. We divided that by the total number of build-out customers, 6,809. We're getting the cost per EDU, $6,455. That's the first component, buy-in into the existing sewer facilities. The next slide, slide 7.
I lied. I have a question. How can we have more customers using water than we have using wastewater?
It's that whole EDU concept. So your demand actually for water is.
So when you say 8,668, that's EDUs, not customers. Yes, I'm sorry. Go ahead. Done. Understood.
Correct. EDUs,
okay.
Yes.
I'm with you.
Yeah.
It's kind of misleading when it says build out customers. It should have been in parentheses EDUs or something like that. So
yes, you're right.
Okay.
You're right.
Okay.
I shouldn't use other. I should say
that. That's okay. I knew I'd catch something. I've been harassing.
Okay. So slide 7. This shows the second component of the capacity fee. This shows what the cost is for new customers. What their share of cost is for the and capital improvement project. So. But we had the town engineers went through each of the CIPs, and they went through and allocated each project to existing customers and future customers. So for water, cost of facilities to serve new growth, it's about $5.5 million. And we divide that by the number of new EDUs, 1,378, and we're getting the cost per EDU of $4,329. For wastewater, cost of the facilities for new customers is about $3.5 million. And we divide that by the number of new EDUs of 1,312 EDUs. We're getting a cost per EDU of $2,692. So next slide, slide 8. This is a third component, and this is only for the sewer capacity fee. This is the cost for the sewer penetration project. And this project, it's a big project. Now got bids of about $20 million. And Town knows that they're going to have to issue a bond over the cost. But we've allocated the project, separately for the sewer capacity fee. So the whole project costs about $19.9 million. The percent allocated growth is at 19.3% from the prior slide. Alan Kruger says you're going to have to finance $13 million of that with bond. Annual debt service is estimated about $830,000. And the bond is expected to be about a 30-year bond, which is pretty typical. And we allocate 9.3% of that growth. We're getting a total fee for the beneficiation project of $3,657 per EDU.
I have a question. Sorry.
Good. No.
I'm trying to understand the numbers.
So on
slide 7 for wastewater, you have the cost of $2,692 per EDU. And then with the denitrification project, the cost is $3,657. Are those combined to give you total for wastewater? Or does the $3,657, so the total cost would be $6,000 and change, correct,
well,
per EDU?
So far, there's more.
Okay.
You'll see in the next.
So this is like an accumulation of numbers. Got it. I'm good. I'll stop asking the same questions.
No, that's fine. I love the fact you're asking questions.
Thank you.
Yes. So let me go on slide 9. So this is for the water capacity fee. So we add in the water capacity fee has that two components, the buy-in fee for $904 and then the new facility fee for $1,329. That total fee is $5,233. That's just for the water side. And to answer your question on slide 10, the proposed wastewater capacity fee, we have three components. We have the buy-in fee, new facility fee, and the penetration fee.
Okay.
So actually, the total wastewater capacity fee is $12,804. I did want to point out that these numbers are draft. We're still working with the engineers just to finalize, all the project costs. This kind of gives you a general idea of how the capacity fees are going to increase.
Okay.
So the next slide, slide 11, compares the current capacity fees with the proposed. You'll see the current combined water and wastewater, the total for EDU is $16,880. We're proposing that about a 7% increase to $18,037. So that's a difference of about $1,100. And slide 12 is a regional capacity fee survey for EDU. So this is what a typical single family home would pay in these other agencies for water and wastewater capacity. As you see, currently the town is in the middle, and with the proposed fees, you'll still be in the middle of the pack compared to the other agencies.
Any further questions?
No, I was going to ask what the year, or I guess the study over study numbers were, but you hit those at the end, so.
Okay, thank you again for that presentation. I guess we'll see you in a couple of weeks when you present this to the board also. Is that correct?
We'll have some final numbers.
And the numbers will be more finalized at that point. Okay. Thank you so much again for your time.
Thank you.
Before we move on, Greg, can you come up to the podium? I have a couple of questions you can probably answer on these things. I look at numbers and anomalies, and I'm going to ask the same question I asked in the Finance Committee thing, but I'm going to ask you, and that is that on slide 7. Well, let's go back to slide 6. On slide 6, existing buy-in capacity fee, water is extremely less expensive than wastewater because of the facilities that are needed to process the wastewater.
Yes.
Common sense, right?
Yes.
When you go to the new facility, it's not the same. Is that because there's a new well that's necessary for new facilities? Is that why the water is so much higher than the wastewater on slide 7?
So, I don't know if my mic's not working here, but on slide 7, the key is the term new customers. So, though we're making improvements at the...
I can hear him. Just needs to be turned up, maybe.
Go ahead.
So the key here on slide 7 is the term new customer.
Yeah.
So we're making a lot of, you know, minor improvements to the wastewater treatment plants here and there, but a lot of that gets weighted on the back of existing customers. They're maybe the retrofits or their code compliance or permit compliance issues
okay.
that are equal to everybody. So when you look at the existing customer base, it's still 80% of the world compared to the new guys.
Okay.
And so under the term, she has new customers. It's really new EDUs, as you just discussed with Eric.
I figured that out.
And the point being is it gives you a skewed sense of the world because that's only a piece of people that you're loading onto the new people.
Because the majority of the facilities already exist and have already been paid for.
And the improvements we're making in wastewater, much of them, are allocated to existing customers in a higher percentage to new customers.
Got it.
Because of the nature of the improvement.
Okay.
Then
the only other comment that I would make is actually the fact that we started this denitrification project prior to expansion of the facility of housing here in Discovery Bay is actually works out pretty well because we can break that cost down. We know what our debt service is going to be and all that stuff, and we can be much more accurate in our capacity fees to them because we've already started the project. Is that, I mean, if the project was still, hey, we don't have to do denitrification till 2030,
it wouldn't be included.
They would have been included as existing customers.
Yeah, and then the other good thing you're benefiting from here is we got a preliminary shot at the denitrification project in the previous rate study. We knew it was coming. And so your first big jump up to pick up that rate, that project was 4 years ago, 4 cycles ago, when we did the last rate study. I think it was 4 or 5 years.
2014.
2014,
and,
yeah.
And so the importance of that is all the homes that have been connected since then have paid a higher rate.
Oh.
And so the connection.
Kind of prepay.
So the reason you're borrowing $13 million instead of $20
million is because we already have some of that money.
Is because those homes that have been coming along at the correct rate,
and we've been saving
2014, you've been collecting those fees and banking them.
Which
that's why you have
legally we have to do because we're not a profit making
right.
organization. Yeah. But we got a little prepayment to mean that we have to have less debt service then.
Correct.
Nice.
Yeah, so we were organized 2014. We knew it was coming. At that time, we didn't have firm costs. We knew it was expensive, but we didn't know the exact cost. But we got expensive into the previous rate study, and there's a big jump up in 2014.
So
this jump up looks pretty mild. You know, $800 looks pretty mild. It's because of the work we did in 2014.
I believe we
estimated denied to be like $7 million in 2014.
Yeah, something like that.
Was it really that
low?
Yeah,
it was low.
It was like triple.
It was $2 million a basic.
$8 million. It was like $8 million.
So it's almost it's tripped. It has tripped. Well, it's almost double. At least 140% or something like that. Okay, I think. Do you have any other questions with regards to this? I got my questions a lot. I think that was a nice summary that she did. There's some very interesting statistics. I mean, there's a very if you want to get into the weeds. The she provided us with all the legal stuff that they're required to do in order for us to be able to back up. Let's just say that XYZ bought the Pantages property and wanted to contest why they're being charged $18,000 or whatever it is per connection fee. They have complied. That's what all this is. It tells them how they've complied with all the government, all the legal processes that they had to do to analyze it, the input from the engineers and all that kind of stuff. And it's kind of interesting, but kind of boring too. But anyway, that's great. Thank you for that presentation. She's gone. And we will move on. I only had to hear it twice to get it right. That's good. item number E1, preliminary traffic control plan for water replacement in Discovery Bay Boulevard.
Yes.
And where is do I have a
yeah, it's on
where's
there.
E1.
Project manager, Mike
Yuranka,
will present this item.
Hold on. Where is my staff report for that?
It's there.
starts on page
30. Page
30.
Should be at the top.
Okay. Is that it? Yeah, got it. Okay. Hey, Mike.
Hello.
Welcome. Good to see you.
Yes, thank you. Good to see you all. So the project that we're close to going out to bid on is for replacement, or includes replacement of a pipeline out there by the business plaza when you first come into the town off the Discover Bay Boulevard. And there's some irrigation services and fire services. It's a 6-inch pipe, about 400 feet long, and it's been prone to breaking. And so that's why we're part of our capital improvement project is to replace the pipeline. The last page of the staff report includes the photo of the work area. And I highlighted there in green where the water line will be replaced. And as you can imagine, contractor will be working out in the street there at Discovery Bay Boulevard, which is going to require traffic control. And listening to all the previous board meetings discussion with regards to this intersection, Dina and I thought it would be wise to come to the board and have a discussion with the board about this traffic control that's going to have to be done there so that you guys wouldn't all of a sudden start getting 100 phone calls, what the hell's going on out there at the intersection? And so you'd be informed. You could, of course, provide any input. So what we've done with the engineers is we have prepared this preliminary traffic control plan. So when we got to bid, we've already gone to the county on the encroachment permit process. And they've approved this preliminary traffic control plan. And the idea is that the contractor would basically close down the lanes there that you see where the green area for the work is, divert traffic over to the other side, but then have enough flaggers to allow left turns, right turns from the intersection there, Clifford Drive, Discovery Bay Boulevard, and into the driveway, the main driveway there, into the restaurant parking lot area. So we wanted the bidders to know that this is something that we're expecting them to do, and that we've already got some preliminary approval from the county, but the final plan is up to them. We're just going to put out the criteria, and then you'll see in the bottom we've got preliminary traffic control plan 8:30 to 4:30 p.m. Normally we'd have 7:30 to 4:30 p.m. But again, listening to the conversation at the board at the last meeting, and some of the directors were saying, you know, peak traffic doesn't stop until 8:30. And so I heard that, and I went to Dina, and I said, hey, let's make this 8:30 to 4:30 so that we don't interfere with the peak traffic loads. And then we anticipate this will be about a 2 to 3 week duration.
That's all.
For
this section, yeah, it shouldn't take the contractor more than 3 weeks to do this part. It might take them 4, but I can't imagine taking any more than 3 weeks. And this is only Monday through Friday, and only during the working hours of 8:30 to 4:30. All the other time, all the traffic control, all the cones and whatever they're going to bring out for traffic control will be gone. Normal traffic flow will happen. There will probably be some steel plates out there where the trenches are open. But other than that, there will be normal traffic patterns after 4:30. So again, we wanted to alert the board that this will be included in the bid package going out to bid towards the end of February. And in case you have any comments or suggestions or make you aware, let the public know again at the board meeting. It's an opportunity for the public to be made aware. So that the goal here is to not have any surprises for anybody once this actually goes into place. And we'll, of course, be notifying all the businesses here 2 weeks before, all the residences coming out out in this area, that there'll be this traffic control going on, this project going on. So there'll be lots of.
Will you utilize the signboard?
Do we have an estimated cost?
We actually did. On August 19th in 2020 in the staff report.
$590.
Yeah. Are we also going to maybe alert the schools, like at least the middle school? See if they can alert their parents.
Excelsior?
Yeah, like Excelsior, just to see if they can put something in the newsletter for the parents.
For newsletter, okay.
Yeah, because that will probably impact not necessarily coming home from school, but going to school.
$9,000? That's really good. See, that's the kind of input that we were hoping for.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we'll make sure that we include that.
It seems extremely expensive.
So that is also, this is only half the project. The other half is replacing about 1,000 feet of water main on Edgeview.
Oh, that's one we've kicked down the road for a while, though. That's the one that...
No, no, that's part of this project.
Oh, that is?
Yeah,
so that's
and we're
the
just focusing...
I was going to say, that seems awfully high for that short kick.
Yeah.
So that's on the other side of the steakhouse you're talking about.
Yeah, on Edgeview.
On Edgeview.
Yeah.
That's where we've always talked about what we're doing with driveways and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, it's literally right here. Like in front of the school. If you were to cross the street in front of the school and just go left that way. That's Edgeview.
Yeah, I'd highly recommend letting the school know about that one, too.
Well, yeah. Wait a minute. The pipe, you're replacing the pipeline all the way from the steakhouse down to here?
No, just the section from Furwood to the steakhouse, which is the little street right there.
I get that, but where's the other part you're talking about?
The other part is right
there.
You look right behind you. I'll show you right here on this map. We are currently right here.
Yeah.
We're talking about replacing this section.
Wait a minute, where are we right now?
We're at the community center.
Yeah. This section here?
Yeah, this is Edgeview. And this is St. Andrews. This is Edgeview that comes from the clubhouse.
Yeah.
Right? So this section where these homes are.
Really? What? I thought we had an issue with the water line over
that
here.
That is a wastewater line.
That's the one that's been kicked down the road a while. Okay. So, questions for you, Mike. Do you have any questions, Ashley?
Yes, I think you mentioned something about homeowners or by homeowners.
No, I was just saying possibly letting the schools know so they can let the parents know that it's going to affect their commute into dropping their kids off in the morning, because a lot of times parents are, as a parent, I'm running last minute, or they have multiple kids to drop off, and so they're going to need a little bit more time to do that.
Yes.
So
especially school gets out at 3 at Excelsior, so a lot of those people will be coming through the traffic area between 3 and 4:30.
Okay, we'll put it in their newsletter.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. Thank you.
Any other questions, Ashley?
No.
Okay, so I have a question. Are you going to alternate driveways for access to the business park then? When you're in front of the double driveway, will you divert traffic to the single driveway, or are you going to be able to have steel plates so they can continue to operate in the shopping center?
So what we do is in the contract documents, we tell the contractor that the means and methods are up to them, but that they have to provide access at all times to the driveway.
During business hours, yeah.
Yes.
So well, during their working hours.
How they're going to do it is up to them. As long as they meet the performance requirement, which is provide access to the driveways at all times, then it's up to them to figure out how to make that.
Okay, that's not our problem.
Nope, up to them.
Okay, but you see what I'm getting at there. I mean, they have to leave at least a driveway accessible to the shopping center at all times.
And that's why we put the contract.
It doesn't have to be both driveways, but it has to be a driveway. Okay, very good. Other than that, and where does, so it dead ends at the end of the green?
Yes.
Where does it go when it, that way?
Over to.
To here? The little,
Clipper?
To the.
That little street there goes down by Clipper?
What are we talking about? What dead ends?
No.
The water, this pipe stops, it feeds the steakhouse, or it feeds the shopping center.
Correct.
It comes from here. It comes from this water.
So it goes south down the boulevard.
Outside of the...
It goes down the boulevard, and for some reason when they made a transition right there on Furwood, they teed it off, and they went right, pretty much follow that sound wall that separates the golf course and the boulevard. The main is just about 2 feet off of that into the steakhouse, but that dead end right there at just south of the entrance of the steakhouse.
Okay.
Doesn't go anywhere else.
Okay. So it's not a through pipe. So, and we don't know why we're having problems with that particular section or this particular section?
That particular section, in the past, we've had 2 main breaks, probably in the last 10 or 12 years. And just because of where it's at, the sound wall, it can do some serious damage, and we feel safer just getting it away from infrastructure.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, so the new main will be out the street.
Okay. Those were mains that were put in place a long time by Hoffman or whatever in the development of the town or whatever?
Probably before they knew the lot lines.
Okay. Old infrastructure. Is that it for that thing?
That's it. We just wanted to bring it to your attention.
Do we
need that input, which is helpful? Thank you so much.
Is it going to move from here to anywhere? Okay.
Well, it'll just be, we'll be talking to the board about it tonight and get input from the board as the full board.
It's not
on the agenda tonight?
No, it's not on the agenda tonight.
Okay.
Will it be on the agenda? It has to be because it's a... Does it have to be on the agenda for the board?
Probably when it goes to bed, no?
I don't think it needs to be on the agenda for the board tonight.
No, not tonight, but
no.
At some point it will be.
Because
it's for the expenditure.
Well, the expenditure has already been approved.
By the CIP? Okay,
that, no,
so it probably won't go...
The expenditure was approved on August 19th, 2020.
Thank you for having the foresight to take into consideration traffic patterns and inconveniences to our constituents,
okay,
and all that. And
maybe what could be done is under comments from directors.
Yeah.
We'll discuss it tonight. Yeah, when we talk about the meetings. Yeah,
here's what's going to happen. Just
yeah.
Let everyone know. Great, that'd be helpful.
Yeah, because it doesn't need approval.
Right. Okay. Very good. Thank
you.
Make note of that because you're going to get it.
I got it. I'm on it.
Item E2, discussion regarding the denitrification update.
That's Gregory Harris.
There's a hole in the ground. Two
yeah.
holes in the ground.
An expensive hole.
And you have this is your presentation on this, correct? I'm ready when you're ready. Oh, well, we have a paper copy.
They have
of it.
A paper copy.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
There's nobody online, so I was.
You can move forward.
All right.
you can explain your graphics as you get there too. So go ahead.
I really went after the graphics on this one. Okay, so this is our first update on the denitrification project. We're in about 6 months, and we'll periodically give updates on the denitrification project to the wastewater committee. And then, if requested to the whole full board in terms of what's going on. So this is our first update. So the DF progress update, obviously I'm Greg Harris with Urban Engineering. We're the design engineer. And the contractor is Anderson Pacific Engineering Constructors. And of course, you guys are the town of Discovery Bay. So we're making the predominant improvements on the next slide to plan number two. And here we have plan number two, and sort of one of the point I'm trying to get across here is we're ripping the heart of the plan open and doing open heart surgery.
I was wondering what that graphic was all about.
Now, this is a nice healthy heart. Maybe it's your heart, Ken. Mine's probably got a little more cholesterol in it or something like that. But at any rate, we're doing open heart surgery at plant two, and if you've been over there, it looks like you're doing open heart surgery at plant two. Okay. And then just some things for people that aren't familiar with things. An ox ditch is that big brown circular track there. And the water goes around in a circle for a whole day. So for 24 hours, it just makes a big circle. It just keeps going around and around in a circle. And then we have these smaller things called clarifiers that separate the solids that are grown in the wastewater from the clean water we want at the end. So they clarify the effluent from the treatment process. So that's just to kind of get yourself anchored. And then what are we doing is on slide number three, you can see we're making a lot of changes here. We're going from two oxidation ditches at plant two to three. And then we got these new anoxic bases, and you can see how big they are relative to the oxidation ditches. We'll have three new ones of those. So the treatment plant footprint, if you flip back and forth between those two slides, is going to dramatically change as part of this project. There's also some improvements at the headworks. We're getting two new headwork screens, and there's some other miscellaneous master plan improvements that are included in this project.
This is an actual picture of the plant, an actual photograph taken off of Google Earth or something?
Yes.
With the oxidation? How come?
No, not with the third oxidation.
I didn't.
It's called Photoshop.
Yeah, because you have the D-Night for Oxditch 2 directly in front of it, and that's not exactly where it's going to end up.
Yeah, it is.
I thought it was going to be offset.
It's not.
Okay. I thought the headworks were in the way.
They are Photoshop, by the way. But yes, they are approximately where they go.
Okay. All right. I'm good.
Okay.
I've been out there walking around. See, yeah, I know.
The visual image of the plant is going to change substantially
drastically
with this project. Project information. And then, just by the way, back to that rate study discussion we just had. We had $8 million for D-Night, is for just D-Night. This project includes other monies that were in the master plan. Like, originally we had Plant 1 improvements, and then we said, let's move it over to Plant 2, and stuff like that. So, we didn't blow $8 million to $20 million. You know, it was $8 million to, like, $13 million is what was in the CIP at an original rate study.
Good
and
point.
And then we had inflation. And then we have recent inflation that drove our costs up.
But we had other things included in that, like,
right. Yeah.
Like
so it isn't just, you know, but we had picked up that we
needed
to
move
for Plant 1 and these other things. Okay. So here's some basic project information. It isn't just denitrification, there's master plan upgrades. And the board made a vote to make all the master plan upgrades originally scheduled for Plant 1 and to kill those and build oxidation dish number 3 at Plant 2. So that was a big change on that. Anderson Pacific Engineering Constructors is the engineering contractor. They're the ones that built Oxygen number 2. So they've come back to do that again. We had notice proceeded contractor in June 14th and an original finish date of June 15th, 2023. So 2 years to build all this. And we're about 6 months in. So you're gonna see me a couple more times before we're done here. Already, off schedule, our current finish date is 7/7/2023, and we'll talk about some of the things that are tripping us along the way here.
Yeah, you're not allowed to let that slide much further.
And then our new permit conditions, they kick in on 12/31/2023, and what is important is that we only have an opportunity to run the plant for a while before our new permit comes in. It's like turning on a new stomach. You don't just like run out when you're a baby and start shoving steak down the throat, right? You gotta
warm
this thing up.
Work the kinks out.
Okay.
I don't know about that analogy, but I'll take it.
Okay. It works.
You start with baby food. You don't just mash
peas to steak.
Yeah, exactly.
Got it.
It takes a little while. And what's important about that is we don't want any violations while we're going through that growth period. It's really good. Contract amount was just under $16 million. And they were low bid by $3.9 million. And so that's significant impact on the project because, you know, contractor feels like, wow, you really got a steal on this. You did get a steal on this if for some reason. There was a discussion about whether they were going to hold their bid. We actually held for 2 weeks to see if they were going to hold their bid.
I remember that.
Price. And so there is a significant savings for this contractor because of the familiarity with the site and they opted to continue with the project. But there is a substantial savings over what could have been your cost.
And they're getting a little extra work here and there.
Yeah, we're giving them a few change orders here and there.
Yeah.
But
it's good having them on site because it makes the change orders cheaper.
Yeah, I mean, part of that is, us partnering with them to make sure they have a successful project and not trying to punish them or things like that, but work with them to get the project done so they don't lose money on the project. And then expenditures on the contract for the contractor, $3.3 million to date. So out of $16 million, we've spent $3.3 million, just essentially where we're at. That's not the total CIP budget cost. Remember, the budget was $20 million. You just saw it in the previous rate study. That includes engineering, soft costs, a bunch of other things that are wrapped up in that.
So does that $3.3 million include those soft costs?
No, that's the contract.
That's strictly
the
16, Anderson's
it's against
money.
Anderson's contract of $16 million.
We've spent about $5 million already for the total project.
Of which we have $8 million in reserves directly for this project, plus our reserves, waiting for the bond issue to come to fruition. Okay.
Okay, next slide. We have, so... we've had some challenges. Every project has challenges, so here's our challenges. Obviously, we're doing open heart surgery, but the patient can't die in the middle of it, right? So we've got to keep everything alive, keep everything functioning while we make these changes, which is the primary reason for the time frame of the construction. We have a lot of significant staging that has to occur, and then bringing our first set of stuff online is going to entertain a very complicated and intricate bypass. So we're going to have some extensive bypassing required. We're bypassing the head works, we're bypassing the oxidation ditches and wrapping around the clarifiers. That's going to be complex and dicey for Veolia. We got some deep excavations with high groundwater, so you've seen the deep excavations, Kevin.
Mm.
And our groundwater is like 4 feet down right now. So you are 6 feet down. You dig down 6 feet, you're hitting water. And we're going down 26 feet to the bottom of our excavations. So we're constantly fighting groundwater and dealing with groundwater as part of the construction. We've already had some interesting COVID and supply chain issues. So we've had just flat out COVID delays. The whole contract crew got COVID, had to go home, so it couldn't work. That happened for a couple days. That happened right at the beginning of the job. And then we got supply chain issues. The slide gate manufacturer, 2 months into the project, just called up and canceled all the orders. So we had to find an alternate slide gate manufacturer.
Was there a cost impact on that?
Yes. So at the moment, the contractor's eating it, but we've had some other issues.
What's a slide gate and where does it get installed?
So a slide gate is when a pipe enters a structure and you want to shut that pipe off. It's a slide that slides over the face of that pipe.
It's like a drawbridge, kind of.
What's that?
It's exactly what we were talking about earlier that we had the problem with, right, Anthony? It just drops down and stops the flow?
Yeah, it just drops down and stops the flow, so you can isolate certain structures and do maintenance on them and stuff like that. But the slide gate order for this project is about $300,000.
How many slide gates are there in the project?
I think there's like 17.
Yeah, I would guess that. Okay.
Yeah, they're all stainless steel, 24-inch, you know, they're big gates. The other thing, PVC pipe, it isn't just COVID, but you know the hurricane we had out in Houston? It wiped out all the resin manufacturers for all the PVC pipe makers in the United States. And that put PVC pipe at a premium and limited supply, so we've had to make concessions to the contractor and work with them to find alternate pipe materials or pipe sizes and pipe thicknesses. And then some pipe fittings, there's like, you just can't get them. Can't buy them right now. So we've had to alternate or change little design things here or there to get those done. There have been some rehabilitation issues at Plant 1, which was the primary reason the board opted not to go fix Plant 1 and instead build new at Plant 2, but there's still some limited work over there that has had issues for us.
Yeah, I'm going to go take a look at that next week.
Some of the project elements at Plant Number 1, repair the inflow pump station. So we had some emergency repairs in the inflow pump station, repair pump station W. Install piping options for maintenance. That's predominantly what we were doing. It was the only work left at Plant 1. Everything else got moved to Plant 2.
Is the influent pump repairs are occurring currently?
They're under construction right now.
Under construction. How long is that project going to take?
That part's probably about another month or two.
Okay.
And then pump station W I'll get into in a minute. And then the piping. At Plant Number 2, we're adding oxidation dish number 4. We're adding anoxic basins 2, 3, and 4. And we're adding, I didn't show them on that site photo, but some inlet pump stations 2, 3, and 4. They take flow from the oxidation dish and run it through the anoxic basins. So little pump stations. They'll be in ground pump stations. We're going to rehabilitate headworks and replace the bar screens, which I mentioned. And then there's some other minor master plan improvements and things that are going on there.
So when I was looking at your slide 3, you said new headworks. We're not really putting in new headworks. We're just
we're replacing all the mechanical equipment at that headworks. We're replacing.
Oh, but the actual box structure concrete stays the same.
We're doing a little bit of concrete retrofit as well. Yeah. So, okay. But you're right. The main structure would be in slowly all stay retrofitted and new mechanical equipment.
Okay.
And then a couple surprises. We always have some of those.
Wait a minute, those are supposed to be on the challenges page.
No, challenges are things you know, surprises are surprises. Challenges are different from challenges. Because I needed something new. Right.
Challenges are like, I have a toddler and they're throwing a fit. Surprise is like, oh, you're pregnant with twins.
Yeah.
I love it.
Challenge is finding out. Surprise is finding out.
Yes.
Challenge is dealing with it.
Okay. Yes.
So plan one strikes again. Pretty much everything we touch a plan one has not gone according to plan.
Understood.
So we dug up a pipe and then we found out the fittings in the pipe had corroded from the inside out and there was no fitting. And we were at risk of collapse on the water line. We found out pump station W had to be abandoned. The corrosion inside the pump station was so bad that we can't save it. And I'll discuss that in a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
We've had the COVID supply chain delays we talked about. And then the heavy rain November, December, we got pounded. Not just our normal rain, but we got pounded hard, and that really set back the project a couple of weeks in terms of being, you know, we got a 20-foot hole in the ground. 4 inches of rain is a big deal. We had a water line break, and right after we built that oxidation ditch and shored it all up and got ready to go to work in the bottom, the water line broke and filled it up full 4 feet full of water for us.
Yeah.
And then just by happenstance, rotor number 3 failed, and the shaft broke on that. And the aerobic digester bank was about to fail, and we had to step in to take care of that as well.
I remember that.
So,
great pictures.
Yeah, these are awesome.
That's unbelievable.
So here's some photos, anoxic basin number 4. You know, you start with a big hole in the ground, and you start with some nice rock base to build on. You come in, you put your rebar, there's your base slab, and then eventually you pour your walls and your rebar and your base slab, and you pour it all the way up, and then you get a full structure, which is where we're at today.
I have a question.
Yeah.
Since I was observed. So, this is basin number 4.
Yeah.
Basin number 3, they put shoring all the way around it, and they are doing it differently than this. This is just, they cut back walls, put plastic on it.
Right.
Just because of where it's located, it was different.
Yeah, so there was a little more room around oxygen basin number 4.
So you were able to grade
so
the,
it's cheaper,
it wasn't as steep.
Yeah, the contractor is cheaper on the contractor to not rent shoring and drive shoring.
Yeah.
And there's more workspace.
Gotcha.
If you lay it back. So he chose to lay back number 4. And 3 and 2, they were so tight.
It's going to be tight for them to work around that with that way the shoring is there.
Yeah, that shoring's tight.
Against the footprint.
Yeah. And then oxidation dish number 4, it's not anywhere near as deep as the anoxic basin. But you can see the original cutting. You know, you basically cut out your little racetrack. You built some structures. And then for the different elements that are inside the ditch, and then they're at that location right now is where they're at, and they'll be coming back to that in a month or two.
It's a really expensive garden that we're growing out there.
We do. The rain
brought it to us. That's nothing compared to what it looks like now. Yeah. All the slopes are green.
Yeah. We're a little preeminent for erosion control. So here's anoxic basin number 3. So this is the shoring you were talking
about. Oh, yeah. That shows it.
So here you can see the site constraint is so tight that we have no choice but to shore it.
I imagine 2 is going to be like that also.
And 2 will be just like this. In fact, it'll be the same shoring. They're just going to pick it up and move it over. And so you can see we've got a deep hole in the ground. It was a lot wetter in the bottom. We just finished putting the rock in. We're just ready to start putting rebar in, and the water line broke on the left. You see we flooded the whole thing up full of water. That says it's back another week.
Tell Ashley the width, the depth of the concrete and why, because that's pretty amazing stuff.
So the base slab
is
2 feet deep. It's 2 feet thick.
Wow.
And we need it that way, one, structural integrity of the walls, but also to keep it from floating. So with the groundwater this
that
way.
That is amazing. So it doesn't just float it away.
Do you think about that?
It will lift. Yeah, the groundwater will lift the structure. It acts like a boat if you don't weight it down. Your swimming pool will do the same thing if you put it in high ground.
But if you have it full, it won't pop up.
Well, yeah, but I got to do maintenance someday, right?
So yeah.
You got to take it out of service.
Yeah.
So you put a big old beefy slab down there to take the wall form.
And how thick are the walls? The uprights?
The walls are 20 inches thick.
It's still a lot of concrete.
we just poured half the base slab today.
Really?
Yesterday. We poured half the base slab yesterday. It was 140 yards for the small half of the slab.
Wow.
Your driveway is probably 1 yard.
If that.
Okay, inflow pump station. Hey, we had to get down in here, see what's going on. We got pipes leaking. So you can see our first picture. Basically, bolts have come loose on the piping. And that rag is coming out between the two pipes. So the pump is forcing rags out between the gap between the two pipes. And then it's pumping grit out there, so it's eroded all those flanges and stuff like that. So we're going to have to replace all that, all those flanges and things. You can see it's on a couple fittings there. Also, some of the bases have broken loose, and the nuts have come loose on those, and we're going to have to reset all those bases. So this is another one of those surprises where we thought we had one leak in one pipe when looking from above, because you can't. It's really hard to tell what's going on looking from above. But when we got down in there, we saw that basically all the pumps were exhibiting some form of damage that's going to have to be taken care of. Rotor number three, you see the top photo there? That's the reason you can see a gap is because the shaft is broken, and the shaft just sheared off, and the rotor fell down. And we had to stop and fix this quickly so that we could ride out the holidays and have enough oxygen supply during the holidays. So that was another little surprise.
We kind of dodged the bullet a little bit there,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Because the parts we had on hand, and Anderson was already there to do the work.
Yeah, so Anderson took
I actually saw him over there welding on that.
They took it apart and got a new stub shaft machine and had it back in a week. So, yeah, that worked out great. So, aerobic digester, we saw that, the pond had gone past the light pole bases and all the stuff that was eroding the road.
So crazy.
And, you know, that base was never designed to sit submerged in the water and was that prone to fall over. So we had to emergency pull the light off of it, and then we had to come in and rebuild that bank so that there was dirt behind the extensions and the light pole base.
That's a great comparison shot you have there, Greg. I was over there today, and we talked about it, but visually, I didn't realize the dirt had receded all the way past the light pole and those electrical boxes down there.
Yeah, so it was definitely not good. Pump station W here, this is at plant number one.
Yeah, proof drop all the way around. Right? Okay.
Pump station W is the backup to the inflow pump station. It's important in function because it allows you to do maintenance on the inflow pump station. So without it, you can go for a while on the inflow pump station, but there's no means to bypass the inflow pump station while you do maintenance on it. Well, this pump station started having piping failures a couple years back, which is why they were not able to bring it online and fix the inflow pump station a couple of years ago as stuff was breaking. So as part of this project, we were going to fix the piping, but when we got down inside there, the rebar, you can see, is some cases exposed. In other cases, the rebar is dissolved, so there's no rebar there. So the structural engineer had to condemn the roof because the roof carries all the soil load and there's no rebar in the roof, and that's not a good thing. So for safe access, we had to condemn the structure, and we dug the dirt off the top so that we could work with it. We dug all the dirt off the top of it so there was no load on top of the pump station. And what we've done is exposed this as a hole in the ground now, and we're running on pump station W now. We had to get it back in service so we could do the inflow pump station. So we're on this hole, it's a big hole in the ground, and then you can go down in it, we got the two pumps running, and we're up and running, and we're working on the inflow pump station. But pump station W is done after this. Once we do this, then we're gonna have to figure out what we wanna do next. What's important is we can't ignore it because there's no way to do maintenance of the inflow pump station if we don't have a backup.
So pump station W is working on a temporary basis right now, so we can handle it. And then once the affluence pump is back up and running, we can then not use pump station W
for a while
and rehab that. Are we rehabbing it in the same location?
Yeah, so we won't be able to rehab it. We're gonna have to demo it and build something.
That's why I'm asking. Are we doing it in the same location? Are we changing location?
Not positive on that yet. So, you know, we haven't really figured out.
That's a good question.
We have to figure out what the end game for pump station W is at the moment. Because there's questions about, if you're going to have to spend $1 million, maybe you're going to think a little bit more about what you want to do. If it was just going to be recoat the walls and fix the pipe, that's what
gate.
You would have done. But now we're into real money, and so we need to stop and think about what it is we really want there if we're going to rebuild from scratch. And we haven't decided as a team here at the town, because some people have discussed maybe we need a screen over there. You can see the rags we're getting the implant pump station. There's been some discussion that maybe it'd be nice to have the ability to screen something or some things like that. So we're still trying to work that out. But what is important is after this project, or maybe even halfway through, at some point, we're going to have to pull the trigger on what Pump Station W is going to be, so we can close the hole in the ground and either build something new right away under this contract or have a new contract with a new contract.
What part of these repairs are covered in our CIP and what part isn't?
The part to fix it and rehab it, the part to build a new is not.
So we may have $200,000 of $1 million project in the CIP or something like that.
I think it's a little bit more than that.
We have a portion.
I did a guess on the most recent rate study. I threw $1 million at it.
So that was included in the presentation we got tonight?
I believe so. Okay. But in terms of your adopted CIP, I don't think it's in there yet. And I'm not sure if it's really $1 million, other than it's not going to be $200,000. That's where you're definitely not there.
So it could be million plus.
That's the area that has the faux gate in it?
No more.
But it really depends on, for sure, what's in the best interest of the town to build. Right? So if it's just put a pump station back in, and that's all we do, put the blinders on, then maybe it's $1 million. What? If it's going to be, you know, hey, this is our last chance to use this area, we got to dig it up, we got to do this anyway, or we're going to do something else.
We have a rag problem. Typically, where do we address that rag problem?
It's at plant 2 right now.
So what you're saying is it might be better to put a filter prior to
screen. Yeah.
A screen to help that you can be cleaned out on a regular basis.
Yeah.
Over so there, and that would make the load and the pressures and all the other stuff that goes along with pumping rags.
It would help influence. Yeah, they're
less strain, less stress.
The bar screens that are coming through DNI project is at the headworks at plant 2. That doesn't protect what's coming in before. So we're looking at the idea that let's put protection before and pump station.
But if you add screens, it's going to be another $1 million.
Really?
Yeah.
So 2 total, potentially.
$1 million for screens?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, I got to design the channels different. The equipment's $350,000. You know, it costs money.
I got to see some pictures of. I mean, the term screen is oversimplification, obviously.
They're like layers up.
Yeah. These are mechanical, automatic, constantly cleaning screens.
Oh, yeah. So they...
It's like a brake that just keeps dragging up on the screen constantly.
Yeah.
Well, rags aren't going away.
No, they aren't. So, you know, the original kind of philosophy when Hoffman was in charge of what got built originally was there's all these pump stations around town. They all pump rags. And the thinking was, well, the inflow pump station is just another pump station. You can pump the rags and we can deal with it.
Yeah, but it's the accumulation that they didn't.
But what they really didn't account for is there's so many pump stations. It's all dumping and it's all on one location. So
right.
The amount of
accumulation.
Rags here is through the roof.
It's excessive.
You know, it's through the roof, the amount of rags that are in that pump station. And so some legitimate thoughts we can do. But we haven't figured that out.
Gotcha. Well, now, that additional $1 million isn't in the rate study, though.
It is not.
No.
But we do have reserves and...
We do, and I just am getting nervous. I mean, it's just every time I turn around, there's
another
expenditure, and so that money can go boop. But we do save money in emergency reserves. We do have those revolving funds,
well,
so we have money there. So
the agenda item for the next Finance Committee meeting is discussing how would we address... We need to inform the board on how would we address a situation where all of a sudden we need $3 million for something. I mean, we don't have the reserves, but we can't. Maybe we have the reserves to do it, but we have to replenish the reserves. How do we go back to the public? And how do, You know, do we have to do another rate study, or what's the process for that? So put that on an agenda item for finance week. Because I don't understand the process.
Yeah, so Dina cringes every time I call her.
I know.
What's that?
Every time I call Dina, she's like, cringes.
Well, I used to do that 10 years ago, and it was like only 500,000. Now I seem to be in the millions.
Thank you. Nice presentation, Greg. Nice pictures. Thank you.
I'm not on the agenda, but I do have one right now.
Yes. But that's a relatively simple item, and that is the discussion about the, well, you kind of addressed it a little bit, but go ahead.
So you should have a handout that I just handed to you.
Oh, we will have one now. Okay.
Okay, so this is a map of the manholes located in Cherry Hills Drive.
Wait a minute. Where does this fall on the agenda?
It falls on, I'm sneaking something in.
It's a D9G.
Man, this looks like more money.
This falls
it is, but you will be pleasantly surprised. I kind of smile.
Okay, go ahead.
It's good enough.
Yeah, it's good enough.
Go ahead.
Okay, so this is a little summary report. Some manhole damage that Veolia has identified. So if you look at the first page, we're talking about Cherry Hills Drive and all these little black manholes.
These are all the manholes that we coded about 8 years ago.
Yeah.
That is correct. Okay, so if you turn the page, you can see that the coating is starting to fail in the manholes. And some of them are really bad. If you turn the page, three of seven, you see some of them are not too bad, but the bottom area is getting closed up. Those pipes are supposed to be open.
Right.
And they're getting covered over. And if you turn the next page, some of the coating is completely gone in some of the other manholes, and we're getting degradation on the walls.
I know. Go ahead.
Okay. And then you can sort of see, you know, different ones are in different shapes, but they all are in pretty rough shape. There's one or two that aren't, there's one that's in good shape, the very last picture. That's the good news we were talking about. That thing looks great.
What was the good news?
The very last picture.
Yeah, that one manhole is in good shape. Yeah, I'm thrilled.
So last time we had a company called H&R Plumbing come out and do the coating on those.
Mm-hmm.
And it's essentially time to do it again before we destroy the manhole like Pump Station W.
Do it again with the same product?
Well, I think that it's probably the best product we can find. The H2S, hydrogen sulfide in these manholes, is over 100 parts per million. And 80 parts per million is lethal in 10 seconds.
So
the corrosion is so bad that there is no product that's going to stand up to this amount of H2S long term.
So this is something that's going to be
repetitive. If I built the manhole out of a different material, like FRP or something, then it would last longer.
But they're already there. So
these are already here.
So it wasn't the wrong thing to do at the time that we did it. It just needs to be done again.
It's just the best we can get, given the fact that it's an existing manhole. Now,
that's some consolation.
You can make an argument that we should start adding chemicals in our collection system at key locations to help reduce corrosion downstream. But what happens in the Cherry Hills Drive is the force main from R&S and J dumps into this street.
And it's all gravity
fed. And then it goes gravity in Cherry Hills.
Right.
But because it's a force main, it goes anaerobic and it releases H2S like crazy. And then when it goes gravity, all the H2S comes out and attacks the manhole.
Yeah.
And so, given the fact that, you know, it's an existing manhole, replacing the manholes would be very expensive. You know, you're probably talking 15, 20 grand a piece times 29.
Yeah.
Plus the traffic input.
This is supposed to be the good news, right?
Yeah. The good news is I have a quote from H&R Plumbing to do it again. And
I saw that.
The other good news is I had told Dean it's probably $160,000 to do this. And
oh, that's like, I'm with you.
And so the quote is only 82.
Yeah.
Yes, so are we going, that's not on the agenda for tonight. For the board.
So the sort of direction from you guys is
send it to finance.
It has to come back.
do you want us to bring this to the board?
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, do you want us to somehow come up with a different alternative?
No.
You
know,
no.
No, we just figured that every 5 to 8 years we're going to have to spend $80,000 on it.
Yeah. Yeah.
But now, let's just keep an eye on it so
I
we don't...
I would say the next thing would be maybe pick off those two force mains and put some ferric chloride in them and pay a chemical cost along the way. But you're trading one for the other. You can buy some chemicals to help cut down this H2S release.
What's the downside to that?
You're paying for it every day. You're putting chemicals in every day.
But how do those, will those chemicals have any adverse effect on any of the other processes down the chain?
Not much, but they will affect our salinity. And we're right at the limit.
So we're pretty close to the end.
We're in salinity again.
Yeah.
I got to feed my dog.
Just a touch on that. We've already begun investigation on trying to find the best chemical we can to address H2S from our points and to make sure that we come up with one that will survive from the points that we have to secure a chemical injection, say lift station S, things like that, but it has to be able to survive the distance to the gravity to actually take effect. And we have to come up with a product that doesn't give us adverse effects that affects our offal.
There you go. I would give you guidance to say please research that and bring a proposal back to the committee with regards to what you think the best way to address this corrosion is.
So the first step is we got to repair the damage, and then if we want to stop it from happening long term,
just bring it back at the next board meeting, so we can get it started. There's some sense of urgency here.
Yeah.
Because we don't want to corrode those manholes any further than they already are.
We don't want them to get to the point of W where then you can't save
them. Have to replace them. Okay. Anything else from you, Greg?
Nope.
Mike, anything from you?
One last thing, if you could just update us on Digest Pond and the cattails that you've done your
job. Yeah, it doesn't matter. No, she just can't. Just stay there.
Getting the more quick update, as y'all know, October the 26th, Wastewater had their annual inspection by the state.
It's a Brown Act. She can stay here.
At November the 30th, we received the official statement from the state based on our inspection, and there was one area of concern found. It was not a violation of any sort, but they did note the excessive cattails and palm trees that were growing around the lagoon. We responded before the deadline of December 20th to our intentions to address it, and as of about 2 weeks ago, we completed removal of the cattails and the palm trees of both lagoons, 1 and 2, and have submitted our statement back to the state with photos and have had no response back to the state, which means it's been approved.
Fantastic.
Awesome.
Thank you, Anthony. Okay, I'm going to adjourn the meeting, and thank you, everybody, for your contributions.